the Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Be seated, please. First case on our calendar is 96-1997, State of Ohio, Act Trail Stephen Ray and Holly Ray versus Ohio Department of Education and Ohio State University. Mr. Melnick.
Good morning, Justices. Before I proceed, I'd like to begin my 20 minutes of argument, 15 of that for actual article itself, and reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time.
May I please report that the court is well aware this is a public record request case dealing with the right to allow the release of certain tests that are mandated by the state, particularly the Ohio proficiency test, as well as the vocational test known as the OCAP test, the Ohio Competency Analysis Profile. I'll refer to those OPT and OCAP for purposes of just expediency here today. But essentially, just for a very, very brief background of principles involved, obviously, the balancing test of the right of disclosure of these kinds of tests that have been essentially held in the issue of secrecy by the state as well as Ohio State's vocational instructional lab to release certain aspects of these tests. And obviously, we believe that the disclosure of the aspects of the test I'll refer to in a moment are required for purposes of the public to be able to scrutinize the content of the tests, the validity of the tests, to review them for accountability and for public scrutiny. Now, in terms of the test itself, we are asking for the 12th grade proficiency test. Procedurally, Your Honorable Justice, it's not a difficult case in terms of the procedural posture, obviously. Public records requests were made, they were denied. We're here then up to the point of asking on an original rhythm and names for the release of those records. My client, the relators, Holly Ray, the former students, as well as her father, Stephen Ray, are specifically asking for, again, the 12th grade proficiency test, and in addition to that, the OCAP, or the Ohio Competency Analysis Profile Vocational Exam.
Before you go deeply into the merits, I mean, we ought to settle a procedural matter. Does Senate Bill 55 affect your case at all?
I believe, Your Honor, Justice Douglas, it certainly does. And we, of course, filed the list petition for Senate Bill 55, specifically with reference to the Ohio proficiency test, now mandates disclosure of that test 1 year after it's administered. Now, the effective date, and of course, this is an overhaul bill, as the Justice is certainly aware of, an entire series of aspects of the educational law, but with reference to the OPT test.
Effective 99.
Yes.
All right. Could you then assume from the passage of Senate Bill 55 that the General Assembly has, in effect, expressed its public policy on what it thought the public policy was with regard to this issue?
Absolutely, Justice Douglas, absolutely. The key thing we're asking for in terms of the proficiency test was after they were administered, scored, completed, and done, we wanted the right to have the unmarked test booklets and unmarked test questions, as well as the call scoring rubrics, so at least for public scrutiny.
Yeah, but you want the current test from that year, not the prior year's test.
We wanted the test of the year of the later for requesting it. But in terms of, as you say, the substantive effect upon what how the case comes before the court,
I'm not sure that this is what I'm going to ask this question. As a follow-up from Justice Douglas, you could interpret Senate Bill 55 as indicating that up to that point, these were not public records.
Mm-hmm. Justice Resnick, I think Ohio's public records law was vague enough in how it has put together both what was permitted or determined to be a public record and what the exemptions were that it was open to question. Many state statutes have it very, very detailed. Ours was much more vague in the way the statute was written.
You don't see any public policy reasons that the legislature would have contended that they were not public records up to this passage of Senate Bill 55. Is that what you're contending?
Well, Mr. President, I believe that there was enough vagueness in the statute that there was some policy considerations to tighten it up and narrow it to the point where they're saying we are going to not make any have any kind of problem interpreting this or any room for interpretation one way or another. We're going to hone in on it and say
what
it's a public record.
What do you perceive as the respondent's strongest argument supporting as not public records, these tests.
Justice President, in terms of the arguments coming from both respondents, I think we have a split, my response is a split response from both respondents, I think from OPD. Now, you know, in all frankness, I think the Attorney General is in a difficult position here. They were claiming that the security statute that said that it could possibly be a criminal penalty to release these results, or excuse me, any portions of the test before they were given could involve criminal penalties. My interpretation of that statute was that that's only before they were administered, not after the fact. But now that Senate Bill 55 has come down the pike, and of course is now law, will be effective here shortly, that how can the Attorney General say that these security statutes prevent disclosure of the test, and on the other hand, the General Assembly says to release them? So that's up to the Attorney General to come up with a resolution there. As far as the second aspect, which is the respondent OSU, BIML, Vocational Trust Materials Lab, they're claiming that there's certain marketable issues of marketability, trade secrets, copyright that come into play. That's where they're coming from. Obviously, my client is coming from a position as both citizens and parents saying, I want to look at these tests for non-commercial fair use exceptions and exemptions to the federal copyright law. And so their counter-argument, I believe, really misses the point from where we're coming from. We're not obviously a commercial entity seeking any kind of commercial advantage in these tests.
But if you're not a commercial entity, why are you not satisfied, your client not satisfied, just to look at the test without taking the test and having it made public?
Chief Justice Moyer, there are two key issues here that we need to break down. It's kind of the cognitive. First is just pure inspection of these tests. What has happened here is though there is access to the test that's been given, there's been a proviso also placed upon that inspection. The proviso is what you have to sign a non-disclosure form, or what I term a secrecy agreement. And if you don't sign it, you don't get access to these tests. That's not the spirit of the public records law in the state of Ohio. Other states do not have requirements that you sign these agreements to non-disclose the contents. They simply say you have a right of inspection. That's one issue. The second part of the copy, Chief Justice, deals with the right to copy. And that, of course, comes into play as the second issue that we have to deal with from our public records statute. But just for pure inspection, I'm saying there is nothing in our law, there's no basis in law to require that a secrecy agreement or a non-disclosure form be signed as a prerequisite to reviewing the aspects of the test that we're requesting as the mandamus action.
Nor is there any basis in the law that you have to give a reason when it is a public record for your seeking it.
Finally, Justice Douglas, this court's case law is quite clear on that, that there is no reason that a relator seeking release of public records has to give a motive for reason. It's simply because a public record must be released. And that leads me to the point of just simply dealing with this issue of its non-disclosure form. Again, no basis in law that I see in any of our case law or statute itself that requires that public records have some kind of an agreement to be signed and to not disclose it. Now, of course, the question would become the respondent who would respond, well, this is a copyright protection, and there has to be some kind of security. But we're maintaining that we're not asking, I want this to be very clear to all members of the High Court, we are not asking for any personal answers of Polly Gray. We're simply asking for unmarked questions, unmarked booklets, unmarked scoring rubrics that certainly would not deal with the personal responses of the student, which, of course, would be another issue that I don't think any of us would disagree would not be a public record. Now, in addition to that, as I stated a moment ago, there's the citation of these statutes in the Administrative Code that is one of the Ohio Department of Education's regulations, 3319.151, this security statute that says can't release these tests for teachers or any type of school administrators, principals, anybody involved in administering the proficiency test now would be subject to possible criminal penalties. My interpretation, I think the statute is quite clear in its language, Your Honorable Justices, that refers to the test before it is given or while it's being given, but not after it's been graded and scored. And frankly, I think House Bill 55 is dispositive on the policy issues of that since its passage and enactment here.
What is your, excuse me, your, take you to the OCAP? We're sort of bouncing around, but I guess that's the best way we can do it. What's your response to the respondents, the Ohio State University's BIML's response, cite to the statute that was adopted since you made the request, 149.43A5, which seems to give intellectual property record status to trade secret status to intellectual property. Is that effective, do you think, in this case?
Well, Justice Moyer, the intellectual property exemption, I believe, was passed in effect as a March of this did believe that the intellectual property exception deals with commercial issues, dealing with possible competitors, trade secret, by obviously keeping certain processes and formulas, etc., away from another competitor to their commercial advantage. My response is that we're dealing with this from a citizen and a parent and a student who wish to review these tests for non-commercial reasons. I think that distinction is absolutely fundamentally critical here.
Do you feel that a different kind of requirement not to use it for commercial purposes, not to use it to say, prepare a crib sheet for future test takers, some release form like that, would that be in violation of the public records?
Justice Spiker, an interesting question. I even, as I reviewed this, was thinking to myself, if we have an agreement that would focus on the commercial aspects of this, that might be less onerous to people such as my client, the relators here, and saying we're not going to sign a secrecy agreement to not involve with by we're arguing the very nature of public record. Now, if there's a
I can understand you got to say you get what you're asking for, and you think there's some gross unfairness in certain questions, you might want to peddle that to the press, for example. That would not be a commercial use of it.
Yeah.
But is it not within the keeping of the commercial interests of those who prepare the test to not give these used for purposes of how to pass the test guide.
There are different, some states have dealt with this. New York's got a truth in testing law for many years, and a number of cases that deal with trying to accommodate these very concerns. It's possible that a very narrowly defined release agreement that could focus on commercial agreements not to disclose those issues could be a way to resolve perhaps some of the balancing problems this court faced with in trying to decide this case.
Well, what section of the public records law would you cite for that then? What exemption? You're asking this court to determine that as a public record it's disclosable without any limitation, and then to concede that, well, perhaps, and to say that your client's non-commercial, and then to concede in your discussion with Justice Piper that, gee, we could maybe live with that. How would this court reconcile that with, the statute 149? What part of, why would the commercial, where would that fit?
Justice Cook, there is enough broad language, I believe, in the public records law to say that if it is a public record, then there has to be, it's almost as if, in many cases, if this was started from a pure trial posture, say, for many of the cases out of the federal FOIA statute, there's an in-camera inspection, there's a balance that has to be done. There's enough general language about in accordance with law in our public records statute, I think you could accommodate that. But I want to make clear, I don't think I'm conceding here when I say it has to be very, very narrow and tailored to commercial interests, because otherwise you're obviously swallowing an exception and swallow the rule here by saying, well, if we agree to sign something that is no longer a public record, that just can't be. It would have to be extremely narrow to establish that the people who seek to look at these tests are doing so. And really, the motive would be, as I think Justice Piper touched upon, that the content of these tests is dealing in many cases not with pure academic issues, but with some of the, what we call the apex of questions dealing with testing honesty or integrity.
Given the possible enormity of this case and its far-reaching aspects that maybe we don't even comprehend at the moment, did you seek any amicus briefs from interested organizations, and does anybody in the educational establishment support your position?
I did not go through any list of attempting to get the knee-high to join. I think that would have been something that could have, I'm sure there's many organizations that would support us as part of the educational establishment. We have citations in our evidence that show that many school principals and superintendents are in support of making sure that any kind of test that the state mandated, particularly the proficiency test, but I might add that
But no formal organization has come forward like the OEA or teachers organizations or local school boards to support your position.
Justice Douglas, there hasn't been a formal support from OEA or any other teachers organization. I don't know what your posture is. You know, it's an interesting case. We don't fall on a particular side of one. It's kind of a mixed issue. Many people are in support of free public records.
I understand that, and of course, we don't decide cases necessarily on who's on one side and what's on the other. But wouldn't it be helpful for us to know what their position and posture might be before we make a decision that might have ramifications that we might not yet see?
Justice Douglas, I'd be glad if the court would wish to instruct myself as attorney for relators to invite some meek eye to file some briefs. Certainly do that. Consider this as a mandamus action with the right of the court to procedurally go in any direction they wish. I would be more than happy to proceed with finding out what that support may be. I don't know if there's any clear distinction on one side or another on this issue, though. Thank you for your question.
I'd like to take you back to Section 14943A5, because it seems to me it's really a very important statement of public policy by the General Assembly, just as I guess Senate Bill 55 was. I understand your answer to be, well, the public still should have access to these records, but it seems to me the General Assembly has said, I think the statute, I believe, was adopted in response, in fact, to the opinion, the decision we made stating that research records were public records, and this appears to be a response to that. I guess my question is, do you believe the statute, the words of the statute, do not apply to OCAP, or do you just believe the statute doesn't apply for some other reason? I'd like a better response than you gave me, if you can give me one.
Well, Chief Justice Moyer, I think the statute is narrowly tailored to, as I said, commercial interest. It talks here about the finding of record as that of a financial or administrative record produced by a faculty or staff in a state institution. I think that's referring more to research projects of professors, of faculty research grants in the intellectual community of the college and university level. I grant you that part of what is done by the respondent BMIL, Education Instructional Materials Lab, is to produce these tests. But again, coming from a non-commercial posture, I don't believe that applies. And I think particularly Senate Bill 55 addresses the public policy from the General Assembly that this is not going to apply in this particular arena.
See, I guess I don't see the commercial, this statute doesn't seem to be related to trade secrets as such. The test we have for trade secrets, which as you suggest is commercial value, is one of the tests, but this statute is much broader. Commercial is one word, but educational, scientific, artistic, technical, or scholarly issue, so forth. It seems to me it's could be directed at the kind of activity in which VIML is engaged here. You feel it's too narrow to catch this conduct.
I believe it's narrow, and I also think that Senate Bill 55 does, certainly they have to be read in paraphernalia, but certainly the narrow intent of Senate Bill 55 would control the more specific language of the definition of intellectual property here, Chief Justice. I believe that's why it would control. Obviously, the public policy of the General Assembly here is to narrow this in this arena of release of these tests in this particular area. Now, Your Honorable Justices, let me continue by saying as well that in addition to the issue of release of these tests and the right to inspect them, there is a reason why we believe that the public should have a right to look at all aspects of these tests that don't deal with personal answers and responses of students, and that is because, again, these tests are criterion-based, criterion references, as opposed to norm reference standardized tests that many people are aware of in the past. What I'm saying is, again, obviously in a public records request per se, we don't have to get into the motive or reason, but I think it is important that you understand why we reached this point that we're at the Supreme Court on the mandamus action by trying to look at some tests. We're here because these tests have to be basically based on a criterion referenced scoring list to deal with subjective issues such as honesty and integrity. And I'm not suggesting people have a right to take the test for this. I'm just saying I think the public has a right to scrutinize these.
Well, that's one of the arguments, of course, is made by the respondents that if the test questions are made available, that some of the questions are used in subsequent tests to test the accuracy of the test, I guess, and to make all of the test questions available to the public affects the integrity of future examinations. What you answered that in your brief. I'd like to hear your response to it here.
Well, a couple of responses. Let me just, part of the major response is part of the there is a panel of scorers that must score them, not necessarily by the process where you can't just have a computer scoring or machine-driven scoring way to reach results. So therefore, that cost is driven up. As far as this issue about reuse of test questions, which I think is also part of what you're driving at, I find that a study called the Focal Study is one of the few empirical studies out there that very few on this. I think part of the reason is that many of the testing industry don't wish to have this established more expert evidence. The Focal Study says that as men get released, that the more they get released, they simply will then diminish any potential negative impact upon students studying questions as opposed to the substantive subject matter for their testing.
Thank you.
There are about 14,000 questions in the test bank as the OCAP test alone. And there may be some cost considerations. I don't believe that there are major ones. And I think that if I can cite the examples out of New York, they had some accommodation to charge some additional fees if there was some concern about the testing industry for disclosure, because if the justices are aware, there's a testing disclosure law that is that exists in New York that requires some of these tests to be disclosed. They tie it into the administration of the tests, how frequently they're administered on a given year, and to what student populations and ages. There's a number of different factors, but cost, this even. The respondents come in their briefs and say that the cost will drive them out of business, and I just don't see any solid evidence to establish that. Of course, you know, as custodians of records that have to be released in a public, record request, they have the burden of proof to establish that, and I don't see any preponderance of the evidence to establish, satisfy that burden. And I might add that all that's submitted on that issue of cost and reuse of questions to Chief Justice is some self-serving affidavits which don't meet that test.
Thank you, Mr. Milner. Ms. Trapper. Is that because you don't think it's your strongest argument, or?
No, Chief Justice, it's definitely our strongest argument. At the time the brief was written, that statute was not yet in effect, so we were addressing the exceptions that we thought were also applicable at the very beginning of this case. Certainly with the passage of the intellectual property exemption, that is the primary exemption that Ohio State is relying upon, and we believe that this has clearly falls to each of the requirements for the intellectual property exemption.
Does that argument fall away under Senate Bill 55?
That is all
in 1999?
Senate Bill 55 doesn't really address this particular test. That's an issue with respect to proficiency test, but it's not an issue with respect to the OCAP test. And that really helps point out, I think, under the 11th in this case, if we're going to analyze the OCAP test specifically under the public record statute, we have to look strictly at the statute itself. We can't, as the court has been noted in the comments this morning, we can't create new categories. We can't create commercial exceptions to it.
So your test can be used in the public domain, but remain exempt from public disclosure?
Absolutely not. Because one of the tests of whether it meets each of the four requirements of the intellectual property test is clearly a record. It's not a financial or administrative record. It's a record that's produced through the creative scholarship and research of an institution of higher learning. It is a product of that research and study. It's addressing specific educational issues.
Ms. Trafford, isn't it copyrighted? Is this?
It is copyrighted.
Is that, where's that fall then within 149? Are copyrighted materials just exempt as a matter of course?
We are not relying on the copyright exemption or the copyright statute to reject the OCAP test. I think that's a different question. The question on the public record statute is, does the Ohio State have to give the records over to the public at large? Does it have to make a test available for copying and unsecured, unrestricted access? The copyright issue would only come into play after Ohio State would voluntarily make the test available for some reason.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. The last sentence, the last phrase of 149.43.85 states, and that has not been publicly released, published, or patented. You don't think that it falls within that exclusion?
No, it hasn't, Ron. For this reason, this test has only been released under very, very secure conditions. It is what is called a secure test in the industry. It's never been published. It's never been publicly disclosed. The only time it's been disclosed is in the actual administration.
And you think that's sufficient to avoid that phrase?
Yes, Your Honor, I think there's a very definite distinction between publicly or making publicly available and the way this test is used, either in the administration or when legitimately someone has a right to come in and actually review it. This is not about, as we later suggest, about the secrecy of the test. The test is available to students, it is available to students, it is available to members of the public and educators if they come in and review it under very secure conditions. In these secure conditions are absolutely necessary in order to protect the integrity of the test. The test will have absolutely no value as an educational tool or admittedly as a commercial tool for the university if in fact it has to be publicly disclosed. And this is the significance, we believe, of the intellectual property exemption. That exemption, I think, is broader than either the trade secret exemption, which does have just that commercial dimension to it. It's also broader than the invention and research exemption that would be there under 33.45.14. This is the purpose of this exemption. I think the court is saying we're dealing with a very, very unique class of documents. We're dealing with BTAP illustrates the broader class of university research and crime. But if you look at the research missions of the university, almost all of their discoveries, their inventions, their intellectual property is going to have some kind of document, some kind of record associated with it. It's a medical college in Ohio State would develop a new medical procedure. Somewhere that procedure is going to be written down in the protocol. If the chemistry department would discover a new drug or a new chemical, there's going to be a written formula that is associated with that drug or chemical. And you can go on, if the math department, the College of Mathematics, would invent a new math, that's going to have a written theorem that would describe that math. These are the creative products of university research. And they derive their value from the fact that they are the result of very significant scientific research and study, research and scholarship. And sometimes they may well have a commercial component to them. And that is, I think, the purpose of 33.45.14. But even without that commercial component, they are the university's intellectual property. And they need to be protected.
So much is based today on these proficiency tests. But I have real problems with the secrecy of them, and all your arguments trouble me because of the public's right to know what is involved in these tests. You're saying, well, this is the product of the university's research and it falls within this exception. But there are questionable questions on these tests, as exhibited amongst the letters contained in the record. And you require parents, you say, oh, the parents can read these tests, but they have to sign as non-disclosure. But what happens when a very questionable area is involved in a test question and the parents can't do anything about it? That's what my concern is. The secrecy surrounding these tests, to me, seems unwarranted. And I would really like you to try to persuade me or dissuade me from holding that view.
Mr. President, I think this will come to a point. I think there's a difference between secrecy and having unrestricted, unsecured, wide open, public disclosure for students, the university, or the testing official to actually make a distributed copy. I think the question you're concerned with is the secrecy, the right of the parents to know what is contained in the test is covered under the existing policy. The parent can come in and review the test. The parent could send an educator that the parent had confidence in to review the test. If the parent had legitimate concerns about the test, or in particular set of questions on the test, it could do what was done in this case. It could write to the superintendent of schools, write to the State Board of Education, and say, go look at this test. What it couldn't do is what Mr. Piper suggested. It can't go to the press and say, these are the questions, and publish them. I think the disclosure, the non-disclosure agreement they have to sign is important for that purpose. It's not just a commercial purpose, the purpose of protecting that test from really losing its entire value. But I don't think it's really fair to say that it's a secret. There is legitimate concern about the question. People with either parents, people with the expertise to come in and look at those questions and look at the questions. And
to your knowledge, has any content of any of these tests ever been changed because of complaints from parents?
The only knowledge I have is the one example that we later included in their appendix where someone wrote in, it wasn't about the Ohio State test, but wrote in and complained about a question that had appeared on a test that their child had told them about and wrote to the superintendent of instruction level, and then he went and looked into the test. So I think there are the other kind of controls there that protect the parents' rights. And then the larger public concern in terms of being able to review the test.
We have a number of privileges in the law with regard to communications. And once the communication is shared with a third party, the privilege is generally waived. Why would it not be waived in this case when you let even one or two or 50 people come in and look at it? You have shared it beyond the principles, the two principles. Why would your privilege or whatever claim you're making for exemption not be waived when in fact it is now in the public domain, maybe only on a limited basis?
I think, Justice, the difference there is I don't think the public record statute is necessarily a privilege statute. I think the public record statute describes circumstances under which records must be disclosed to the public without any restriction whatsoever. There are many records that don't rise to the levels of public records, but yet may be disclosed on an individual basis. And I think this would fall within that example. The difference.
You say there are many. Give me one.
For example, there would be.
I think we heard this argument, in effect, from you or from people connected with Ohio State on the issue of either the medical donors or the research people. We had an issue like that before for Ohio State.
Well, let's look at some of the actual specific exceptions in the public records. Probation records, for example, are not public records. So, yes, there are circumstances under which the holder of that record must disclose probation records to other persons. Medical records are not public records, but there's any number of circumstances in which a state agency may disclose a medical record in its possession to other persons. And I think those illustrate the difference between public disclosure and disclosure of records that aren't public records under the state.
Thank you, Ms. Trash. Mr. Carroll.
Hey, police and court. My name is Roger Carroll, and I represent the Ohio Department of Education. Now I'll be addressing the issue of the 12th grade proficiency test. Whether the 12th grade proficiency test is a public record, is the Department of Education proficient? That is not. Initially, I'd like to address the ramifications and the implications of Senate Bill 55, which was passed by the General Assembly in August and signed by the governor in August of 1997. Senate Bill 55, the key critical point of Senate Bill 55 is that it's effective as of July 1st, 1999. And in that bill, it provides that the Department of Education shall make available to the public state proficiency tests offered the previous year. And the department shall continue to make these documents available to the public each year following the administration of that test. I believe the significant effect of this legislation is a recognition by the General Assembly that the 12th grade proficiency test is not a public record, and that is why this piece of bill was passed. Otherwise, the passage of this bill would have been a superfluous act.
Could it be a recognition by the General Assembly that the folks who control the use of this information are treating it not as a public record, and therefore it's necessary to specifically mandate that agency of state government to do so?
I think I'm asking,
is there some legislative history or some record of legislative intent that would indicate that the General Assembly came down on one side or the other as to whether it was or was not?
I'm not aware of any legislative history in Ohio that we don't have legislative history on these measures to address that concern, but I believe there's two factors that would make me believe that this was a recognition of the General Assembly that at the present time the petitions and tests are not public records. But one of the key elements, the General Assembly did not decide that this bill should be effective immediately. One of the key elements of this bill is that proficiency tests would not be made available to the public until July 1st of 1999, and the tests that would be made available were the tests that were given the previous year. And the policy decision made by the General Assembly, and a decision I believe this court should refer to the General Assembly's judgment on that matter in terms of when these tests should be made.
Well, that was just a recognition that the Department of Education said, don't make us do this until revealing earlier tests might be embarrassing.
I don't think there's anything embarrassing about the test, Your Honor. The question that the Department of Education is confronted is having a test of valid and a test that's fair for all students in state. We're talking about fourth grade proficiency tests, sixth grade proficiency tests, ninth grade proficiency tests, which at the present time is required for students to pass before they can graduate from high school. Those tests are given on a minimum of four times a year, and also the 12th grade proficiency test. And the concern of the department is not anything to be embarrassed about, because as has been stated by counsel earlier, these tests are open and can be disclosed subject to a non-disclosure form. The concern of the department is to make sure these tests are fair and they're measured.
Isn't that sort of an oxymoron? They can be disclosed subject to a non-disclosure?
No, I don't believe so. What this is allows people to come in and review the test questions. It allows them to come in and review the substance of the test. It allows them, if they have concerns, to raise those concerns with the department and people that are involved in administering the test. But what it doesn't allow is the test to be disclosed. And
you can see there is also a strong public interest weighing on the other side of this question. These tests are about failure.
I'm sorry, the tests are about what?
About failure. they are telling many children in our state, you don't measure up. You fail to meet basic minimum standards. For those who fail, that's an important and tragic consequence in their life.
I would agree with that.
And would you agree that there is at least a compelling interest on the other side of this case in favor of disclosure that has to be balanced against the needs to protect the integrity of the test?
I think that the interest that the other side of the realtor in terms of being aware and able to review the test is being met by the department's policy, which allows people to go in and review these tests. And if they have concerns, to be able to raise those concerns. I mean, these are tests that they're tested on mathematics, science, citizenship, writing, and reading. Basic subjects, and I think obviously these tests are critical. The General Assembly has made a decision that these tests are going to measure how students progress. They're also going to be used to measure how schools are performing in terms of teaching their students.
We are going to acknowledge that to effectively raise concerns about a test, one needs to build public support for that concern. And if you can't disclose to the general public, you end up being one lonely citizen. One lonely mother unconnected with any other parents around the state who have found similar concerns when they examined the test, and that's a pretty tough position to be in terms of moving the bureaucracy. You can't do any public disclosure that would perhaps pull together other people who have found similar concerns.
Certainly people can unite and have similar concerns in a general way if they're concerned about the test, and certainly within their rights as citizens, petition the General Assembly, petition the Department of Education. The concern that these tests are out in the marketplace and they don't become a valid measure of what we're trying to determine whether students have achieved certain proficiency in various areas. And also the fact that these questions are used from one test to another in order to make sure these tests are valid. In other words, what we're measuring this year will comparable to what we've been in years past. People are passing at the same rate as they did in the past. And so I think that there are concerns that parents may have, concerns that outsiders may have, is being met by the department by the fact that people can come in and review these tests and make their decisions otherwise.
I'd like to give you just a brief moment to convince me that Section 3319.151 really applies to the relator's request here. It seems to me that it's directed at a person knowing what is on an upcoming test and giving information to a student who is going to take the exam rather than making available to anyone a past exam. What's your strong? I've read your brief, obviously, but give me your strongest argument.
Well, the statute is very specific, and one thing that's important to recognize, this is, as far as we're aware, the only statute that is out there for any kind of test. It literally protects the proficiency test, and the statute was enacted to protect the proficiency test as before us. The statute reads that no person shall reveal to any student any specific question. And as we mentioned, the questions that appear on this proficiency test are repeated to other tests. One third of the questions that may be on a proficiency test that's given at this point in time come from prior form tests. So in other words, this is a statute in conjunction with the administrative regulation 3301.1305, which allows the Department of Education to maintain the integrity of these tests in order to make sure that they accomplish what they're set out to do.
I suppose a student taking an upcoming test would not know which specific questions from a previous test are going to be on an upcoming test, would they?
That would be correct. I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll. Mr. Melnick, if you've used your time, you may take 30 seconds for rebuttal, if you like.
Sure.
Let me address the Attorney General's argument. I think they're in kind of a dilemma here in trying to reconcile Senate Bill 55 and making some rather unsupported distinctions about the policy reasons for the passage of the act and outlining its being effective 3 to 4 years hence, and whether that is somehow a recognition by the General Assembly that the public record statute didn't include the right to release these tests previously. I think he's made a distinction without a difference. I think the statute is broad enough for this passage. It just reflects the recognition by the state the student that takes a proficiency test that might be in the 12th grade may relate to a younger student that's coming up was on the test. Is that person subject to prosecution by the school administration technically for these revelations of anything that's on the test? Obviously, that's a little bit preposterous. The issue here about reuse of test questions, whatever test questions are reused are usually minimal, extremely minimal, probably less than 5% of any questions that are reused on these examinations, if your honorable justices.
There's a dispute between you and I think and Mr. Carroll on that. Do we find in the record the fact? Whether he said a third and you say 5%, I think I heard him say a third, you say 5% are reused. I don't know if it makes a difference, but it would be nice to know factually what's correct.
There's some exhibit evidence in the respondent's material, I believe, from the Ohio Department of Education that does relate the amount of reuse of test questions. Of course, it depends on the test form and the different levels as well, so I don't think there's an absolute answer to that, but I think we can agree it's a small percentage, so it wouldn't affect the overall reuse issue when these tests are in other forms or are tested if there's the public release prior to that. And I think the public policy of the General Assembly reflects that the passage is done at 55.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.